from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The Lighthouse for the Blind has received a bequest of $125 million from a man they had never heard of who had no contact with the organization. And the gift is more than 15 times the annual budget of the San Francisco nonprofit, which serves the blind and visually impaired. Lighthouse executive Brian Bashan joins Forum in this segment of the program to discuss what the windfall may mean for the organization and his quest to remove the stigma surrounding blindness. And Brian, welcome to the program. Good day.
A pleasure, Michael.
Well, this really came out of the blue in every single way, didn't it?
It really did. I mean, the Lighthouse is 113 years old. We have 60,000 donors. We usually get a bequest of $1 million here or there every year or so. But this is by far, not only is it our biggest bequest, it's the largest bequest in the 300-year history of American blindness.
And you knew as soon as you got the news that suddenly everything had changed.
Everything would change. And all of the sort of hidden and pent-up potentiality of what could be the solutions to effective living with blindness would come. We knew this instantly.
Well, you, in fact, are sort of, in some ways, a case in point that's parallel to this gentleman, Donald Serkin, who left you this behest. He went around for a long time using significations like visually impaired or low vision or that sort of thing, as opposed to saying the B word.
Saying the B word. It's so natural when somebody begins to lose vision. You don't know any competent blind people. You don't know about the fun and the joy and the potential of being involved in the world as a blind person. So you hide, just like so many other people have hid in history, gays and other folks. And it really takes some sort of connection with a community of positive role models, mentors. That's what we do at the Lighthouse. And I was fortunate to have that in my 20s and 30s.
Donald, you sort of came out in your 30s.
I did, in fact, absolutely. And Donald Serkin, this great benefactor, became blind in his 70s, as many people would. And he didn't have that where he was living. He was in the closet. But I think this huge bequest represents his mentoring over the time that we should do something to involve people more like in his condition.
Well, I want to hear about that, but I thought first we could hear an excerpt from a story about the donation and your mission to remove the stigma that we're talking about around blindness. The story, by the way, was released today on KQED's new podcast called The Leap, and in it, Brian Bashan talks about how he hid his own blindness for decades.
It's like when somebody says, "You see that over there?" And I would nod and say, "Yeah, I see that. I didn't see that. I missed stuff in the movies. I planned to do my travel while it was still light so I wouldn't have the bewilderment of how I was going to get home in the darkness." In the blind community, we say we're in the closet about it. And it is just like being in the closet in the gay community. You try to pass and you try to be somebody that you're not.
It's a sense of shame.
It's absolutely a sense of shame.
Well, from what you've been able to deduce, that was not only something that you experienced and that many have experienced, particularly if they have what is often called 10% vision or whatever, but Donald Serkin must have experienced. You did a kind of investigation of who he was, right?
Little by little, we came to know who he was. We went through his home. We talked to his associates. And we found a guy who was – he built a huge business operating with 30,000 customers in 6 states. He was a control freak. And when he had to do something different because he could not control his blindness, he didn't have any solutions for that.
You found so many things about him in his house. He had he was living up there in Puget Sound with thousands of books. There were all these lights and mirrors to make more light and everything, which kind of gave it away. Pomegranate juice, all sorts of things. The guy was a real exercise nut, I suppose, or a freak, as they often describe it. Had a mania about exercise. It was really excessive and fanatical. But do we really know when he started to lose his sight? Because I read his obituary and it said he had several jobs and served as a deckhand on the Great Lakes, worked oil rigs in Texas, was a ranch hand, filled potholes in Yellowstone Park. These are not things that one can do necessarily with not being sighted.
No, he had normal sight at that period of his life. He was one of those American people who did a bunch of things, knocked around in his 20s and 30s, found what he wanted to do, and he then did it. His sight loss started later in life. He had age-related macular degeneration, which means little by little things got foggier. He never went completely blind, and he hid that vision loss even from the closest people around him.
This was, again, probably the result of shame, but also in many respects not wanting to admit, not wanting to accept the reality of it, to get a cane or a dog or any of those kinds of things.
Deep inside, if you've never met a cool blind person, why would you want to identify as that? I mean, that's really at the heart of it. He believed that blindness was something you should be ashamed about, and he didn't have the opportunity to meet the kinds of folks, say, for instance, here in the Bay Area, who are doing all kinds of technical, scientific, administrative jobs, supporting families, living the life they want.
You know a story by Raymond Carver called Cathedral? By any chance?
No.
It's about a blind man. The only reason I mention it, it's an extraordinary story, but it's also about the stereotypes that people have about somebody blind, mainly from television and the movies.
Among the worst. You know, if blindness is 1/3 of 1% of the population, most blind people become blind and they don't know any blind folks. They don't have that role modeling. If you're African American, you have role models. You have the President of the United States. If you're blind, you have to rely. Sometimes your first impressions of blindness are those Hollywood ideas or other weird, strange stories about what blind people are. And this is at the heart of what we're trying to do in the Lighthouse, is change those models and connect people to the truth about blindness.
And this money will obviously help afford all kinds of ability to do that. What do you have in mind at this point?
Well, it's going into 3 different directions. I should say at the beginning, though, that Lighthouse has just received the bulk of these funds, and we're starting a strategic planning process with our board of directors to identify. But I can say for sure we will be the best teaching facility for blind people, not only in Northern California, but around the United States now. So we will amplify and intensify our blindness skills training. We also really want to use this to become the nexus connecting with high tech in the Bay Area. So many of the ways that we work effectively in the world involve technology. I mean, my iPhone has my email on it. It's got text, my schedule, and all that. It's a regular consumer product. We want more of that to happen. And being right here in the center of the Bay Area on Mid Market Street in our new building, it's going to be incredibly important that we have the resources and the people to interface with Bay Area technology. We really want to have partners there to invent the future going forward.
We're talking with Brian Bashan of the Lighthouse for the Blind, and they just received what at first was a mysterious donation, shall we say, or bequest of $125 million. Sort of felt like, remember the old show, The Millionaire, Michael Anthony?
Yeah.
The check just came, and it was unexpected and unanticipated and certainly a dream come true, I suppose, because there is so much you can do with this. Is it at this point, what about his children? I mean, he had a son and a daughter. They were each, I guess, given $250,000 in his will. The daughter has said things publicly about treatment by him that certainly is quite serious in terms of allegations.
We ourselves don't know anything about that. We'll let the courts decide whatever they will decide about that.
There is court action, though. You're anticipating court action?
We anticipate that she'll file, but we don't know. And we'll obviously respond to any of those any of the court's decisions.
Well, at this point, anything that the daughter has said is alleged. But let me offer the phone lines to you, our listeners, and invite you to join us. We certainly welcome your involvement in the program, and we want to talk more about the sense of people actually hiding their blindness. And I couldn't help making the parallel in my own mind to I've done some work on behalf of literacy projects, and there are people who are literally blind in the sense of they're illiterate. They can't read street signs or anything like that, but they hide it. Again, a lot of this really has to do with shame, the shame in having a disability, the shame in simply never becoming literate, all of these kinds of things. But what to do about it and what to make people, I think, as Brian is saying, we're more accepting here in the Bay Area than in most places in the world, but it's certainly a serious problem. And you may want to address it. You may want to talk from your own experience. Let me tell you a phone line you can join us at. It's 866-733-6786, and we do welcome your calls. You can join us now. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. Talking generally also about blindness, and I know we have many blind listeners, and they may want to join in the conversation. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments right onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @kqedforum. Here's an email from Robert who writes, how refreshing to contrast this selfless donation to the Lighthouse for the Blind and the recent story of former Citigroup chairman Sanford Weill and his wife Joan, who took back a $20 million donation to a struggling New York college when a judge ruled that the school could not be renamed for her. You want to comment on that, Brian? Just let it stand.
We'll let it stand. I mean, the Sirkin donation is just a remarkable act of philanthropy about a guy who had a life entirely unconnected with philanthropy until then.
Well, the whole notion, though, of people who are walking around with problems to their sight and their vision and who don't want to admit it or don't want to reveal it, I mean, what can you really do about that to make them more comfortable or to make them simply feel that they can come forward?
Sure. The most powerful thing is to meet blind people living our lives who are having fun and doing amazing things. I mean, if you come to the Lighthouse on Thursday, we'll have a series on social media and how to do it blind. And one of the guys there is a father of twin three-year-olds. I mean, once you see a blind father, once you see a blind administrator, once you see blind people earning nice livings and taking care of others, you cannot unthink that. And that is the subtle revolution that we're trying to prompt, and we'll do more as we build the Lighthouse into a place where cool blind people will be and where other people who are new to blindness can figure out how to be like them.
Chris, I think you've said this, but the greatest irony in all this is that Donald Sirkin left money to an organization who actually could have helped him and didn't have the chance to do so.
He didn't. And we see that a lot. I think somehow he knew that other people will have the chance in other years, and now it's our time and our chance.
It was also kind of thrilling in some ways to know that he was as familiar with your work without your knowing that he had gained that familiarity. Huh?
Well, we do have a rather sprawling website, and we know that he reviewed it. Some of the language in his will came from our website. So we think that in the future, social media and other media, webcasts and other things are going to be the way that the Lighthouse casts a shadow much larger than our past in Northern California.
Let's go to our callers, and we begin, Bill, with you. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hello, Director Bashan, Bill Gary here.
Hello there, Bill.
The story that I like to tell is of the National Federation of the Blind, which has always sort of touted the idea that we had to just give up and use the word blind, as my father did. He was blind as well. Anyway, at a banquet, I was 9 years old, and the president of a young organization, the National Federation, gave a talk at which he concluded, "You have heard, there but for the grace of God go I." And then he said, "What unspeakable arrogance that grace is dispensed to some and withheld from others. How about something much more inclusive? Here, within the grace of God, go we." And the whole place went up in flames. There were, you know, breaking glasses and everything else, because these 300 or so blind people had never heard things like that.
Well, I'm glad you brought that to our attention, Bill, and I thank you for it. And Brian, do you want to comment?
Bill Gary is an example of the kind of people that we want to other people to get to know. Bill's been a scientist and an engineer as a blind person his entire life. His father was also blind and supported his family as a piano tuner going back from the 1920s, all in San Francisco. It's a remarkable story of blind self-sufficiency and inventiveness.
And Bill, we thank you for the call. In fact, you know, I suppose Bill might be able to speak to this, but certainly, Brian, I'd be interested to hear what you have to say, and other people who have blindness can probably relate to this. I remember a blind friend of mine saying, you know, people are self-conscious about even speaking about, like, if they say, oh, I see what you're saying, and then they, oh, my God, what did I say? That kind of thing. I mean, sighted people who are sensitive but maybe go over the mark on their sensitivity.
Sure. I hate torturing the English language just for us. So as far as I'm concerned, I saw a movie. I read a book. It's just English. It's just what it is. The methodology is just secondary.
Let me bring another caller on here, and we go to Guillermo. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my phone call. Hey, my question is, or my observation would be, are you prepared to reach out to those who are not English speakers, blind people, who actually they're not only insulated by their blindness, but also the background with their culture and language, and not only in the Spanish or Chinese or Japanese or any other language. There are people in this area or in this nation who actually don't have no access because their cultural background and their life is even worse. Because there is no access, there are no services available, even though there are services available for blind people, but has not been designed for their culture or their language.
Okay, Guillermo, let's find out. Do plans include bilingual reach out?
Not only do plans include, but we're already doing it. I mean, we're acutely conscious that 48% of school children waking up in California every morning speak Spanish at home. So, for instance, we have an introductory immersion to blindness class that we do. We do it both in San Francisco and at our camp retreat in Napa. We are now starting a series that are conducted entirely in Spanish. So Spanish role models, Spanish-speaking teachers, all that because we know absolutely the face of blindness in California is the face of diversity.
And thank you, Guillermo, for that phone call. Here's a listener, Susan, who writes, congratulations, Lighthouse. I work for the Earl Baum Center for the Blind and Visually Impaired in Santa Rosa, and I can tell you how difficult it is to keep the doors open when the primary funding partner is the state who keeps cutting the budget. You folks do great work. Keep it up. So what about collaboration, Brian?
That's a very classy thing, actually, to hear. And the state of California, of course, does not support undocumented blind people in any way for training. And that's a matter of concern. The Lighthouse now has the resources to pick up the pieces for those kinds of gaps, like that if you're blind in California and you came from Central America or Mexico, the state won't teach you Braille, won't teach you computers or white cane or any of that. But the question of collaboration is an even more important one. We are stronger when we can get the smarts from other organizations, not only blindness organizations, but big tech throughout the Bay Area. We are going to be the meeting ground, the good offices. Our new headquarter building, which will open in March, will have places where we're going to convene conferences and workshops and breakout sessions and advance the cause considerably.
Could you talk a bit about how the technology for the blind has changed, particularly recently, and what may be coming up?
Sure. The basic work tools of reading email and writing something and calendaring and all that, that's been worked out now for quite a while. It works. It's pretty efficient. What doesn't work is the Wild West of apps, and there is a lot of unregulation. This is one of the things we want to work on. You can take an app. Some apps work beautifully, and some, you know, I'll just pick one at random. Bay Area News used to work. Now, as a news junkie, I can't get it to talk. It's just poor app writing, and we need to work. We hope to set up a center at the Lighthouse so that we can advocate for that directly. So we live in a world of social media and consumer devices. Try to find a stove or a dishwasher or a washing machine that is accessible now. They are almost always now with flat touch screens and screens like that. Part of what we need to do in the space of consumer electronics and in the space of the internet is making sure that consumers, we're not shut out from commerce. And we've done that a number of different ways.
You were alluding before to just being trained with a cane. I mean, that in itself is a lot more challenging than most people realize. And I believe you said in the podcast that we alluded to before that was done by The Leap that there are people who would rather just get a disability check and not have to learn, for example, how to use a cane.
Or don't have access to the kind of good training that's going to take a few hundred hours. The sad thing is that if you're blind in school, you might get an hour a week or maybe an hour every month, I've heard, of cane travel lessons. That's just way under the bar of anything approaching competence. When I learned how to use a cane, the first few weeks, I just didn't think it was going to work. And now it's like this great Olympic event. I travel all over the world. It's like kind of like a fun puzzle to figure out, buses, cities, connections. Most blind people haven't been that fortunate to get that kind of training. And so what we want to do is increase the number of trainers that we have and also raise the expectations that unless you get hundreds of hours of training, you are not going to be at the standard that will keep you safe and keep you efficient.
Our guest again is Brian Bashan of the Lighthouse for the Blind, and our next caller is John. John, you're on.
Yes, good morning. I'm speaking as a low vision person, and I just want to say I'm going to make this short. When I was coming up, I was in foster care, and I went through some abuse. That's how I lost some of my sight. From then on, I didn't know. I went to sight-saving classes in school, but no one told me. I was around disabled students, but no one told me about blindness, and I read large print books. But as a person, it took me years to find out what I really am and what I could do. So I'm 64, getting comfortable, asking for help on how to access the credit card machines in stores. But there's a lot of trauma around losing one sight and dealing with it. Today you have the chance to have counseling and support. But when I was coming up, I didn't know what that was about. That's all I've got to say. I'm enjoying this program. And the gentleman there, Brian, I've been to the Lighthouse, and it is a wonderful institution. It helps you. It has helped me get present employment. That's all I got to say.
Well, it's a lot that you've said in a concise way. Thank you, John, for the call. Good to hear from you. We'll hear from another caller from San Rafael. Bill joins us. Bill, welcome.
Yeah, I've always had a respect for the blind because I grew up in a small town in Indiana where the most famous and the most successful person in the town was blind at the age of 6 and went on to be a great inventor by the name of Ralph Teeter. And Ralph, among many inventions, invented the Speedostat and went on to build an incredible company that employed the whole small town of Indiana. And secondly, my grandfather was suffering of diabetes and losing his eyesight and had me memorize the eye chart at the DMV when I was about 12. And then when I was 14, after driving him around in the country, he was asking me what color the stoplights were. I told my parents, and they said, well, from now on, you're driving Grandpa. So from the age of 14, I became Grandpa's chauffeur.
Thanks for that story. Bill, appreciate hearing from you. Judy writes on our website, my uncle, a resident of San Francisco, became blind as an adult. He was an engineer and was retrained so that he could take apart, clean, and reassemble pieces of mechanical equipment. Once, when my uncle and my mother, his sister, were walking along a sidewalk in San Francisco, a person came up to them to ask how to get to a destination. My uncle gave detailed walking directions, such as go down this street 2 blocks, then turn right and go another block, turn left. The man thanked him and went on his way. My uncle got a big kick out of the fact that the man had no idea he was being given directions by a blind man. And Lulu writes on our Facebook page, regarding your shame comment about being blind, perhaps people just don't want to advertise that they are more vulnerable.
That's absolutely true. I mean, unless you have the image of strength in blindness and capability, it will read as vulnerability. And who wants to admit that on the street with strangers and all that? But this is teachable and this is learnable. And also, yes, people start out with shame and trepidation. Eventually, they'll get to the point where they'll see that there's a lot of fun and magic in blindness. There's a lot of ways that we do things that are just remarkable and easy, sometimes more efficient. And we want to get to that point, too, to understand that this is a state of being human that is rich and detailed and something that is little understood.
And we go to another caller. Yvonne, join us. You're on the air.
Oh, hello there.
Hi.
Yeah, I work for the County Office of Education, San Mateo County Office, and I am an itinerant teacher of the visually impaired and orientation mobility instructor. And what I wanted to address was the sense of isolation that the families and the students themselves sometimes experience, and in fact, quite often do. We, as a group, Related Services, host a social, a VI social every year, so that all the children and the young adults in our program have an opportunity with their families to meet each other. And we serve birth through age 22. And it's been the most wonderful experience. The kids get to meet each other. They know that some people are taking advanced science and math, and they see others are also in wheelchairs. Others use canes. The parents get to tell each other stories of success. It's been a wonderful experience, and we repeat it every year for this very reason. We don't want the kids to feel isolated. Sometimes we have maybe one child in the entire school district for several years, and so we want to make sure that they have a connection. And the Lighthouse is wonderful. In fact, I have to, you know, give a shout out to Jamie Gump, who runs the youth program there. He came and spoke to our cadre of 12 employees.
Well, Yvonne, thank you for the call. I want to mention, actually, because we're almost out of time here, that we have a link up to the website of the Lighthouse on our website, kqed.org/forum. And you can actually hear the full story about Brian Bashan's quest to change the way we think about blindness on KQED's new podcast, The Leap. And we have a link to it on our website, again, kqed.org/forum. And you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Nice being with you, Michael.
Nice being with you, and congratulations again on this amazingly generous gift. May you use it in the best of health. And we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. You can continue this discussion online, kqed.org/forum. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.